Is that you, little octopus?
I don't know why when I saw the countdown, I started saying in my head the kids next door thing. I'm Janelle.
And I'm Laurel, and you're listening to the Foot Off the Bed podcast.
That always throws me off. I was just like, 5, 4, 3, 2. And then the little digital computer sound that it makes in the intro. I don't know why. I saw Barbarian, and it was amazing. Like, please go watch. Please go watch.
I have yet to know anything about this movie, and Vicky was always talking about it. She was like, I kind of want to go see it. I still haven't seen anything trailer related to this movie.
They need no marketing. None. Like, honestly, it's not at all what you expect. Like, okay, so it's marketed as this girl goes to an Airbnb and it's double booked. There's a guy already staying there.
Hey, no, I know this now. All right. Wait, yeah. Okay.
And that shit takes the craziest turn that you will never expect. Like, I really sat there and was like, okay, typical. What the fuck is happening? Like, it was so good. I also saw Woman King, and it was also amazing. It's not something I would typically watch, but I would give it a solid 9 out of 10. Like, it was really good.
I didn't watch anything. Well, except for My Normals and Abbott Elementary coming back and watching that. But that show was too good, actually.
Abbott Elementary is amazing. My favorite character is the principal, just because of how ridiculous she is. But then after, my favorite woman character on the show, but my favorite man character is definitely Tyler's character. I still stand on the fact that Gregory is autistic coded, because he just has like some of the weirdest social quirks that I'm like, yeah, this man is autism coded.
For me, it's like I'm so used to him being like this stoic character that like there will be random times where he's like normal. He talks in a normal tone, makes normal expressions, and it freaks me out. I'm like, wait, whoa. What are you doing? Like, he'll like smile, laugh at something, and I'm like, wait. But I love his character.
And I also miss what's her name? Janine's ex-boyfriend.
Tariq.
Yeah, fucking annoying as hell, but hilarious.
I only like him because I'm thankful for when he performed at the school. And spoilers if y'all haven't watched the season yet. But I only liked him for that one scene where Gregory just starts going in dancing.
We were like, oh my God, this is horrific to watch, but also entertaining.
He was hitting those moves, though.
For real. Hilarious.
We are very looking forward to Halloween.
Hell yeah. If you're listening to this, it's October 17th. So it's not yet Halloween, but oh my God, we have like stuff planned. And I'm like excited for my costume because I still haven't tried on the dress for some reason. And yeah,
I have everything but the shoes for my outfit.
I don't have the headband and the scarf, but I feel like that's so easy to just go get from a beauty supply store.
Yeah, I think so too. Or you might be able to get it from Hot Topic, because apparently Hot Topic is selling Scooby-Doo outfits now.
They were so late with that. I was like, it's October 9th. Y'all should have been had y'all Halloween stuff up.
Right. How you gonna have everybody else but Scooby? Come on now.
Right. Like, that's weird. The show is Scooby. Okay, actually, yeah, I gotta talk about that. So this new Scooby-Doo show, it looks mainly black, right? Which is great. It's supposed to be genre bending, and Mindy Kaling is behind it. But they took out Scooby-Doo and said that for what she's trying to do, she doesn't think Scooby-Doo would fit. And I'm like, because she thinks it's Scooby-Doo is like Kitty. And I'm like, bruh, if we saw a cursing Scooby-Doo, do you know how on the floor I would be?
Exactly.
Like, if I saw Scooby-Doo cursing and, like, trying to say curse words with, like, when he says, like, everything in the R, like, every first letter starts with R, like, I think I would be dying.
Bruh.
But I don't know. That didn't make much sense to me that she took him out.
How
but,
could you have Scooby-Doo yeah. and take out Scooby-Doo? Like, I don't get that. Like, y'all can take out, like, Fred or Daphne. You cannot take out Scooby-Doo and still call it Scooby-Doo.
Right. Oh, it's not called Scooby-Doo. It's called Velma.
Well.
But everybody else is in it. So it's just like, okay.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I really feel like justice for Scooby-Doo, put him back.
Get as something if you don't want a dog or something, just say that.
Right. I don't know. But yeah, I'm excited for all the... There's like this new show on Netflix with the producers behind Hill House. And I forgot what it's called, but basically like there's a whole bunch of cancer kids in a house. In like a big mansion, where they care for them, and they have like a club where they tell ghost stories to each other. But then they actually start seeing ghosts. So I was like, I want to watch this.
I saw the trailer for that. I want to see that too.
Yeah, it looks kind of good. So I'm like willing to watch it today and tomorrow. I'm off tomorrow. I'm excited as shit because they never celebrate Indigenous Day. They never have us off or whatever. And for some reason this year, they have us like working remotely, but not logging on for any Zoom calls. So I was like, yes.
Yes.
I'm about to watch scary movies all night tonight and tomorrow.
Fall break Monday and Tuesday. So I get to leave work early.
Ooh, lit. You know, actually, it's also kind of weird. This week is going to be like a short teaching week for me. Like, I only have Tuesday to teach and Friday because Wednesday and Thursday they have exams. And the kids who don't have exams have the day off. So it's kind of like it's almost like a fall week vacation for them. I thought that was like really weird. And then in the last week of October, they're having a homecoming day and dance that I'm for some reason planning. I don't know how I wrote myself into these things, but I'm helping to plan it.
You just don't like to be free, I think.
I think so. I really have to like look at what I be doing to myself. But so this month is like kind of full of fun stuff. So I was like, hopefully we can make November and December equally fun.
Yeah, because I'm going to a concert this week.
Ooh, for who?
For my K-pop band, NCT.
Ooh.
And I have to somehow accumulate green clothing before Thursday.
Oh, damn.
Because that's their fan club.
Amazon?
I was thinking about it. I did reinstate my Prime, so I might get some things immediately.
Yeah, I feel like that's the only way, low-key. But yeah. Yeah, I'm going to just get started. But yeah, look forward to us. I might put out like a speed video. You know how like people put the time-lapse videos of what they're doing? Might put a time-lapse video of us like in the escape room. But yeah, so this week we watched The Conjuring, which is Laurel's favorite, and it was released in 2013, if you don't know, if you should know, because The Conjuring is like one of the more popular horrors right now.
It was like around when Insidious was still a thing, and those movies and the Paranormal Activity. And for some reason, those particular movies just like changed the genre of horror for me. Like the genre of like, or the whole paranormal side of horror.
Yeah. And it's because it's, what's it called? It's by, what's his name? James Wan. Because he, like, I don't think anybody, when he created Saw, like, that was supposed to be his his starting portfolio movie. Like, it was low budget, and it was literally just ridiculousness, but it could show, like, how creepy he could be for a director. And then he just went flying with it. He started creating the most, like, not creating, because he didn't write it, but he started being a part of all the craziest horror movies, and now, like, he's just a part of that. And they just keep getting better. Well, not all of them, but like they just keep doing things that are like, damn, like this is crazy. Like, what made you think of doing this?
Bro, I kid you not, the first movie of Insidious, I think the villain, the demon, was inspired by something from Spirited Away, because shop of his, it reminds me of the boiler room or like something like that. In Spirited Away, but continue.
You can't talk about The Conjuring without talking about Insidious, or even thinking about what other influences they might have, because it does look like the thing from Spirited Away. But Patrick Wilson actually stars in both too, so it's kind of funny. But and Insidious is my favorite. So Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga. Vera Farmiga. I also see her in like other horror stuff too. So she's also in the horror universe a lot. And they both play
Lady of Horror alongside Sarah Paulson.
Mm-hmm. So both Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga play as the infamous paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren. So, we've spoken about Ed and Lorraine Warren a few times, but they are very famous paranormal investigators. They're also controversial, but we'll probably get into that later. But this film is the first in the Conjuring Universe franchise, and it is inspired by many of Ed and Lorraine Warren's real-life haunted cases. So this one is about Roger and Carolyn Perrin, and their story begins in 1971. So Roger and Carolyn Perrin moved into a farmhouse in Rhode Island with their five daughters, Andrew, Nancy, Christine, Cindy, and April. And they also have a Labrador retriever, Sadie. And for some reason, Sadie refuses to enter the house and entrance to the cellar, and it's boarded up for some reason, like the cellar. But yeah, Sadie's just like, I'm not going in there. It's weird. So of course, as soon as an animal tells you something is up, shit starts to go down. So within the first few nights, a lot of weird stuff starts happening. Like the clock in the house keeps stopping at 3:07 a.m. And then literally within the same week, Sadie is found dead. And I think it's actually the next day. Sadie is found dead in the morning, and Carolyn wakes up with large bruises, like somebody was beating the crap out of her.
Pants at all.
Right. I was like, damn, Sadie.
To get rid of her immediately.
Right. Like, Sadie didn't even have a chance to protect them.
Didn't even get hit first or nothing. He gone.
Right. It was like, fuck that dog. So Carolyn ends up contacting demonologist Ed and Lorraine Warren, and in the beginning of the movie, it actually starts with a possessed doll named Annabelle. These two stupid ass girls bought her and were in possession of her, and she was just doing weird shit, like popping up in the hallway, writing stuff on the wall, I believe, like just overall doing very demon like stuff wildin', and Ed and Lorraine Warren came and collected her, and they actually do own the doll Annabelle in their museum. So yeah, she's held behind a glass case and everything, so that's actually real. And so when they came to the parents' house, they do an initial investigation. And Lorraine, who is a clairvoyant, sees that dark forces have attached itself to the parent family and it's not going to leave. And also leaving the house will not free them of this demon. So they're like, literally like, what the hell do we do? So they're just like, okay, we're just going to gather evidence of who this demon is, because that's the only way you can get rid of a demon is by knowing its name. So they gather evidence, they place cameras and bells around the house with the help of their assistant, Drew Thomas, and police officer Brad Hamilton, which I was like, was he a police officer? I did not remember that. So when they said it, I was like, what? But
like, he was like a police officer, but he didn't have a partner.
Got you.
But he's one of the very few cop characters in a horror movie that I actually liked.
Right. So once they did a bunch of research, it revealed that the house once belonged to an accused witch named Bathsheba Sherman, who sacrificed her week-old baby to the devil and killed herself in 1863 at 3:07 in the morning, after cursing all who took her land. And that's why they keep seeing the clock stop at 3:07 in the morning every time something weird happens. There are reports of numerous murders and suicides throughout the years in the houses that were built on that property. So they were like, Ed and Lorraine Warren were telling the parent family, you know, it just seems like this woman is still attached to the land, but now she's attached to you. So we have to figure out how to get her out. But one morning, Bathsheba appears to Carolyn and fully possesses her. That night, the group hears a spirit luring Cindy into the wardrobe, where she reveals a secret passage. Lorraine enters the passage and falls down to the cellar, because it like literally just fell apart, where she sees the spirit of a woman whom Bathsheba had possessed long ago and used to kill her child. Bathsheba attacks Nancy, and the incident is caught on camera. The Warrens concluded it's sufficient evidence to receive authorization from the Catholic Church to perform an exorcism, but Father Gordon explains that approval would have to come directly from the Vatican because the parent family aren't members of the church. So now they're just like, what the hell do we do? Like, I mean, pretty much throughout the whole movie, they're like, what the hell do we do? But Bathsheba is just like wreaking havoc, and they're just like, fuck, what do we do? Eventually, the Warren's daughter, Judy, is attacked in the Warren's own home by Bathsheba. And the only reason why Judy is attacked is because she's the one that's actually going through puberty. And it's not, what's the word? It's not indicated that she's going through puberty, but she's like one of the oldest ones. So you can always tell, like, when it's one of the oldest ones, like, this is the person who's going to be harassed the most outside of the mom. And she's only attaching, Bathsheba's only attaching herself to the mom because, you know, she herself is a mom who killed her baby. So the parent family take refuge at a motel, which is crazy because they literally told them, hey, this thing is attached to you, so it doesn't matter where you go. But they left anyway. And Carolyn takes Christine and April back to the house to kill them. So Ed, Lorraine, and Brad find Carolyn in the cellar trying to stab Christine. And Lorraine warns that if they take Carolyn outside the house, Bathsheba will kill her. So they tie Carolyn to a chair, and Ed attempts the exorcism himself. So she escapes. It's the craziest scene. Like, the chair lifts into the air and everything and is, like, waving her back and forth, and it crashes to the ground and breaks. Like, you know, obviously she's free now because the rope was attached to the chair. And they're just like, it's just going crazy. So then Carolyn escapes and attempts to kill April, and Lorraine is able to call to her by reminding her of a special memory she shared with her family. Like, I think the mom at one point in the movie told Lorraine about like a fun vacation they had or some fun day they had, and
of them at the beach.
Yeah. And Lorraine was like, I think she told her to just think of that memory whenever she's going through this stuff. So then, yeah, Lorraine in that moment told her to think of that memory of them at the beach. And then I guess that got through to her. So it allowed Ed to complete the exorcism and lift Bathsheba's curse. Bathsheba was like literally expelled out of her. And yeah, so everybody survived. But I'm guessing they had some trauma. So then when Ed and Lorraine return home, Ed adds the haunted music box that pretty much started all of it from the parents' home to their room of cursed artifacts that they had collected from past cases. And then it sort of indicates to you that there's going to be more movies beyond this one. But yeah, that's how it ends.
That music box created so much tension and it didn't need to.
It did not need to.
And I still want a music box like that. Because that, the little swirly thing, me expecting to see something pop up in the mirror, so I'm staring extra hard, and it never does.
Yeah, and that's what made it so good. Like, there were literally just moments when, like, you would think that something was gonna happen and it wouldn't, and then 2 seconds later something else would happen and it's like, what the fuck is going on?
We're moving into, let's just play hide and seek, but it's like hide and clap or whatever. And they kept showing like all the kids like playing and clapping, trying to get near each other, and then they show the basement door opening by itself and a set of hands just clapping, but they don't belong to anybody.
That was the best. Like, that is what had everybody like, yo, The Conjuring is one of the best, because there were just moments where it was just like, yo, nobody was expecting that. As soon as you saw those hands, you was like, nah, I'm out.
It's a time to thrive in.
And that's how, like, I think that's why The Conjuring and Insidious changed so many horror movies, like just change the genre overall, because they kind of showed like you don't have to do much to be scary. You can literally just like do little simple things that you wouldn't normally be creepy, but in this context it is. Like, they're literally just playing hide and seek.
Little girl got her hair pulled by the ghost.
Right. And then wasn't there the moment where like there were like feet hanging or something? Like, it looked like somebody was hanged and it just appeared behind.
Somebody was in the basement and it just you heard the sound of like the rope like about to break or something. But like they were under the table. So like all you saw was like the end of the person's dress and their feet. And so like it was weird just seeing that, because it looked like somebody just got hung right in front of them. And then all of a sudden, the feet just turn towards the
character. Right.
I've never been more scared in my life. I was like, please don't show the upper half of his body.
Even the music box. Everybody knows that music box sound. Like, when you hear that, you know, oh, somebody watching The Conjuring. Like, that's how crazy.
Ding, ding, ding.
That shit stayed in my head for a long time. I was like, nah, I don't. If I ever hear that while I'm trying to sleep, it's done. My soul has left my body.
Like, you're just gonna immediately wake up and be like, okay, got my bug out bag. I'm out.
I'm out.
But walk out the house.
And wait, was it also this movie when somebody walked into the room? And there was, I think Bathsheba was supposed to be one of the little girls, but she was sitting in the chair rocking back and forth and Annabelle was in her lap? Or was that a different one?
No, that was when they went back to their house and they had Vera Farmiga's character realized that the spirit was trying to latch onto her as well through her necklace, because she had dropped her necklace in the water behind the house at the little dock thing. That was her way of like trying to like see into her life, because her necklace had a picture of them and their daughter. So then Bathsheba was like, oh, I'm gonna get to you and your kid or whatever. So she was scaring the daughter at home while they weren't there. And that's when Claire was like, oh, now I remember her name. Was Lorraine was freaking out. She was like, we have to go home now. And they rushed home and the daughter was like locked in a room or something. And I think her grandma was watching her or something. Mm-hmm. You could tell I watched this movie too many times. But yeah, she had gone to their house and did that craziness. I'll never forget laughing because the chair is just rocking by itself in the corner of the room, and then it turns and it just comes flying at the door the second Patrick Wilson opens the door.
Right. Oh. There was this other part. I forgot. This was another part that scared the shit out of me. Not really scared the shit out of me, but it was just like, this is all you have to do to scare somebody. When the clothes were drying on the line and the sheet like got off the line and there was a body there, she was like, what the fuck? I would have been like, nah, I must be crazy because I could have sworn there was a body there just now.
Good. It's too good.
Yeah, I will. This movie will always be a 10 out of 10 for me.
Because, like, the cop, he goes in there to, like, because he's the skeptic of the group. And the one who's, like, traveling with the Warrens and, like, helping them record and stuff, he's like, yo, I can't wait till you see some shit. And the cop is like... But then they both start experiencing stuff together, and they're like a little duo, and it's so cute. And it's just so funny to watch a grown man go from ain't no ghosts are real to they might be. And all he did was spend half the time on the first floor. I don't even think he went upstairs.
Yeah, but oh my God. It's just so funny, like, to think about the rest of the Conjuring universe, because, like, after a while, I think after, like, two, I didn't care anymore. because one was just so good, it was like, you can't top this. And then Conjuring 2 was good, and it was, like, it was great. But then, I forgot, what was 3?
3. I forget what was 2, to be honest with you. 2 was focused more on Annabelle, right?
Yeah. 3 was the nun, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That was the most horrible one. I couldn't even get past the first 10 minutes.
It was a lot because it was like Patrick Wilson like freaking out. And I'm like, why do they keep making these movies where Patrick Wilson is haunted by some decrepit old woman?
Right. Oh no, I know what 2 is about. 2 is about the old man.
In the chair. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's when Patrick Wilson starts singing Elvis to the kids. Yes. That's my favorite scene in the movie.
It's also just, that was like the weirdest one. I remember liking the movie. I was just like, there's no way that in real life this should happen. And then I read the story and I was like, yeah, that's what I thought.
They're like, okay, y'all went a little too far. It was very muddy because a lot of the little things in the Conjuring universe became their own movies, but they're still in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
The Nun came out starring Vera Farmiga's younger sister, who I love. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember her name right now, but I love her. And, like, you think that it's, like, all one movie. It's not. It's all one universe. But, like...
Right.
It's just... I just love it for the continuity and, like, Patrick Wilson.
Yeah. Oh, that was the other thing. It was also, like, The Conjuring 3. I think that's what I'm mixing up. So, there were movies that came out before the actual The Conjuring 3. Like, The Nun and Annabelle came out before that. But The Conjuring 3 was The Devil Made Me Do It. And we talked about it.
Yes.
And, yeah, it was... Mm-mm.
That was crazy. Oh, my God.
It was just... Mm-mm. Like I said, this movie will always be a 10 out of 10 for me, so...
It's just, I've never watched a movie so much that still scared me, even though I knew what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. But nothing will ever, like, shock me like the first time. The first time seeing that shit was like, oh my God, I wish I could watch this for the first time again, because this was crazy.
That and The Haunting in Connecticut. I wish I could watch that for the first time again. Because I was scared. Because it was so uncanny. And, like, it's so true to this day. Like, you move into a house and you have no idea the past history. But you in the house because, oh, it was cheap. And, you know, it's a beautiful house or whatever. And it turns out this used to be a freaking funeral parlor. Like, dang.
Right. Jesus.
It's crazy. The stuff like that. Just I love it. But my review, obviously 10 out of 10.
Yeah. But if you want to watch this, the crazy part is I don't think it's like in many places to watch anymore. I only could watch it on HBO Max.
Okay.
So if you have HBO Max or you have a friend, stream it. Stream it there.
I said, you already know I bought the whole series on DVD, so. I do not play when it comes to The Conjuring. I love The Conjuring.
I feel you.
God. And that was the year I went off to college, I think. Yeah, graduation year I went off to college. After that summer. I just need another movie like that. Like, Jordan Peele, I think, got real close to it with his introduction to his universe or whatever. Because Get Out was another thing. I probably, if I could watch it for the first time again, maybe I would.
I would. I don't think anybody can, because it's one of those things where it's like, no, this is truly a horror story for me. Like, this is not a fun type of watch where I'm like, let me watch this again. No, I'm traumatized.
Like, anybody of color, if you watch the movie more than once, you got the drop, the single drop rule. There's somebody in your family line is not of color, because there's no way anybody of color is watching this movie again.
No, like, it's like, the equivalent for me, even though I know it's not at all compared, but it's like, you know how like every time like something like the Central Park Five or something like that will come out and people will watch it, and I'm just like, I cannot watch that, because it is a true horror story for me. I can't watch it. I will literally be traumatized if I watch it. And that's how I felt about Get Out. Like, I watched it and it was great and it was fun to talk about. But then after a while, I was like, I could never watch this again. I cannot watch it.
Hey, you got your dime from me. It's been so long since I've left the movie theater and couldn't say a word.
I could not say a thing. Like, literally just sat there in shock, like, oh my God, what did I just fucking watch? This is literally how I feel all the time.
Me looking at any white person after that movie like,
yo, me and some of my other friends were talking to our white friends and saying like, yo, I couldn't trust white people for like 2 weeks. And they were just like, yeah, I feel you. Yeah, you do. You don't know how I feel right now. I'm really side-eyeing you right now. I'm questioning our friendship.
Like, I'm not taking nothing from you. Offer me food, I'm not taking it. You offer me to come to your house, right. I can't come in there. Nothing.
Let me see your past 5 Halloween costumes. Let me see them.
But yes, on the topic of The Conjuring. So there were a lot of unexplainable things that happened on the set of The Conjuring that a lot of people do not know about. So we are going to dive into those things. Because I heard a few things. Like, I heard that the set was haunted, but, like, I don't think I ever looked further into it. So, Joey King, who played Christine, ended up covered in strange bruises all over her body after just a couple weeks of shooting. Patrick Wilson explained to the UK's The Independent newspaper that Joey King hadn't been doing any stunts. Child actors don't usually do stunts anyway. Nor had anything hit her over the course of filming. They just kind of showed up. Although the mark subsequently disappeared, Wilson still felt weird about using the anecdote during press for the movie, even though he admitted it totally fit the bill. Wilson also confirmed over the course of the chat that his own home is haunted, noting that I've heard people on two different occasions say they've heard kids' laughter in the middle of the night in my house. And that used to freak my wife out. But that's another story entirely. All right. Now there's a case of possessed drapes.
Come again?
Yeah. The Conjuring scared up over $300 million worldwide, meaning the mastermind behind it, James Wan, would be seen as the biggest target should any demonic forces feel they were being unfairly portrayed on screen. James Wan has noted that he would be too busy directing to even notice a spirit standing next to him. However, Patrick Wilson, whose underlying interest in the paranormal seems to have grown exponentially while shooting the films, did show him a video while on the set of The Conjuring 2 of a curtain supposedly moving by itself. This is in quotations.
That could have been the wind.
This is in quotations. At the end of the soundstage, there was these huge curtain drapes. They started swaying on their own. They just kept moving. None of the doors were open. The air conditioning was switched off. They just moved on their own. End quote. Wan told Star 2 in Seoul, South Korea. Considering his lead actor supposedly caught the whole thing on camera, it begs the question, where the hell is that film and when can we judge it for ourselves? And the demonic hour, the guys and kids weren't the only ones targeted by vengeful spirits. Reportedly, lead actress Vera Farmiga also experienced some odd happenings over the course of filming. In an interview with Collider, James Wan discussed how the actress confided in him that she had been waking up between 3 and 4 a.m. every morning from the moment they started working on The Conjuring. This time of day and night is commonly known as the demonic hour and has been a significant focal point of movies, including The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Oh. Even weirder, The Conjuring itself features a witch who died during that specific time frame, something Farmiga brought to Wan's attention after confiding in him. The actress continued to have troubling sleep afterwards. Take from that what you will. And computer virus. Vera Farmiga apparently can't catch a break. Cinema Blend's Eric Eisenberg recounted how, during a roundtable discussion for The Conjuring, Farmiga also divulged a rather spooky discovery of 3 digital claw marks on her computer screen.
What the hell?
The weird part is, the marks appeared immediately after she'd finished speaking to director James Wan about playing the role of Lorraine Warren, and about her desire to have Patrick Wilson acting opposite her. This makes us wonder if somebody in the afterlife mad at her or Wilson. It's probably Patrick.
I was about to say, it's probably James Wan.
Oh my God. Farmiga later revealed that quite literally the day after she completed her work on The Conjuring, she woke up with 3 claw mark bruises across her thigh. For those taking notes throughout this article, where once the claw marks were on her screen, now they're on her body. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, I'd be like, so you tried to get through to me the first time. Now you did get through to me. I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
Although the actress noted they weren't painful, silencing those who sought to suggest she might be under some kind of paranormal attack and were more like little bruises. The fact the marks looked as though they had been made by long fingernails was what really freaked her out. Apparently, she even texted Wan about it, but much like her connection between the witch in the story and her own real-life sleep disruption, he wasn't too impressed, at least not enough for her to register his response. Seen one ghost attack, seen them all. Why do y'all keep talking to James Wan? Like,
like what? He don't give a fuck. He was just like, okay. I've seen bruises before.
Strangely, the spooky stuff didn't affect only those directly involved in the movie. Screenwriters Carrie and Chad Hayes recounted in a chat with Collider that Carrie's wife had experienced something weird while he was away on set too. with Carrie noting that when things happen, it's usually to a wife or a woman at home whose husband is gone. She experiences more. In this particular case, she noticed a weird water formation that appeared on the floor out of nowhere. Considering it was cement on an open floor plan, the spill was blamed on the family dog, but the poor pooch was left off the hook once the spills started showing up again and again in the exact same spot after being meticulously cleaned up. After going to Lorraine Warren herself for professional advice, Carrie deduced it was a water poltergeist feeding off teenaged angst from one of his kids who Hayes and his wife confirmed was going through a turbulent time. The writer remains remarkably calm about the incident, noting that nothing weird has ever happened to him personally, but you have to have a pretty good faith in protecting yourself, because when you write about stuff like this, it can be somewhat of a beacon. And this is why we only write about horror movies instead of actually writing them.
Can we talk about the fact, though, that they said the demons were probably, like, not okay with how they were being portrayed, so they were, like, lashing out? That's kind of funny.
Hey, if I was a ghost and somebody is getting me wrong, I'd be mad as heck. Like, hello?
I'd be like, you know what?
You know, fuck this whole set. Fuck these curtains. Fuck these drapes.
Right.
That's funny as hell.
James Wan is literally floating in a chair upside down in the middle of the room going, oh, I've seen this all before.
Or like, the demon is watching. Oh, okay. I didn't really react like that. She was actually in my space touching my music box, okay? So, let's be real.
When the real-life Perrin family came to visit the set of The Conjuring, they were already on edge at how realistic everything was. With Cindy, the second eldest, now a grown woman but a child at the time of the haunting, physically moving away after coming face-to-face with the witch. But it didn't end there. During a set visit with Shock Till You Drop, screenwriter Chad Hayes recalled how, in the style of an actual horror movie, one of the other Perrin children told him straight out, something really bad is going to happen out here today. Worryingly, their mother, Carolyn, subsequently fell and broke her hip.
Damn!
She was the only one who didn't make it to set that day. Which might mean it's better to face your demons head on rather than have them seek you out via creepy child premonition.
Sheesh. That really sucks.
It does. The Warrens, infamous artifact room, which turned out to be so popular with fans it spurned a spinoff in the form of 2014's Annabelle. They really did come out like literally the year after. Was lovingly recreated for The Conjuring. Considering it's a room where the paranormal investigators keep all their spookiest souvenirs, the process of making it ad hoc for the movie could be seen as tempting fate depending on one's superstitions. During the same visit, producer Rob Cohen detailed how on the purpose-built set of the Warrens' infamous room, there was one particular piece of their history that just wouldn't stay still. A wooden pig supposedly kept moving around the room. It would be there, and they'd come back, and it would have moved over to there, Cohen explained. Could the little guy possibly land his own Annabelle-style spinoff? No.
It's like, what's scary about that? He's just moving.
James Wan does not approve. In keeping with being the less scary of the two films, The Conjuring 2 only really had a couple of low-mileage spooky incidents to speak of, which were discussed in detail in a set visit report conducted by Shock. First off, the set was blessed by a priest prior to shooting taking place. It's seriously haunted, at least according to Warner Brothers security guard Johnny Maddock, who doubles as a real-life ghost hunter. Oh my god. But that didn't stop drilling and hammering underneath the stage when there was no one working. Construction ghosts, perhaps? Do we need to call the Scooby-Doo crew for this one? There's too many Scooby references today. I can't take it.
That's so random.
It is. I've heard that one, though. Like, they would say, like, there were sounds of construction and whatnot, even though there was no construction happening. And I was just like, It was also revealed.
Said it's time to work.
It was also revealed during the shock set report that Lei Wannell, Wan's longtime friend and filmmaking buddy, had a strange incident while visiting the set himself. According to reports, a load of Insidious photos, which Wannell had shot during his production on the movie, mysteriously showed up on his iPad while he was visiting his buddy. However, they were not saved on his PC or his iPad, and he couldn't get rid of them either. Unsurprising, really, if the set is as haunted as claimed. Just to be on the safe side, maybe, instead of The Conjuring 3, just direct the Care Bears movie instead. That is all for the hauntings of The Conjuring set.
Oh, so I'm guessing Devil Made Me Do It didn't get haunted.
It said the devil only haunts people, not things.
Right. That's kind of crazy that the first one had so much going on, though. That would make me not want to be on set. I'd be like, actually,
I'm going to go home.
James Wan is like, I'm going to forever, like, laugh about that. They're like, every time something happens, they're like, James. And he's just like, and?
Right. And? Okay. We have filming to do, so, you know, not playtime.
People are literally, like, floating in the air in front of him, and he's just like...
I want to make a show like that. I want to make a show where it's like literally The Office, but like the set is haunted, so everybody's just making commentary.
Hey, like everybody's talking, and then something on somebody's table goes flying across the room, and everybody looks at it, and they're like, "So anyway."
Yeah, like, so anyway, does that mean that we don't have any more donuts left? Because
a new person who comes in and they're not used to it and they just are freaking out every second.
I would literally watch that and be dying.
It's not just like, oh, haha, fun. No, this is real.
Right. But yeah, so when I watched The Conjuring, I actually, like, I feel two different ways about Ed and Lorraine Warren. Like, they did these things and they're an inspiration to the movies that, like, some of the movies that we've watched and we liked. But I'm also just like, them as a people seem so shitty that I wanted to write a story about them. And I did read something, but I was like, I don't want to just, like, talk shit about them the whole time. So I'll probably just bring it up as, like, a regular thing right now, but that's not the story that I'm going to focus on. But I found out that this man, Ed Warren, was sitting here not only cheating on Lorraine, but with a young girl. I was like, that is so disgusting. Like, this girl was not even like 18 or something. She was 15 years old. I was just like, what? And then Lorraine knew about it.
I mean, she's a clairvoyant, so she better know.
But it's just like, yo, so you knew about this, knew that this girl was underage and didn't say anything.
She said the demons are gonna get him. I don't need to worry.
Bruh. I was just like, all right, I don't know what's going on, but y'all weird. Between all the stories I keep hearing about them just making shit up and the families who are like under attack or whatever being like, I mean, we're under attack, but not like that. Like, they're just dragging it now. Like, it'd be, like, some small stuff happening, like, not small, but, like, it's still, like, crazy, like, things getting thrown here, like, here and there, but it'd be, like, a 5-month gap between stuff, and...
You know how certain people exaggerate.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, Ed and Lorraine Warren will be, like, dragging the shit out of it just so they can get interviews and, like, going and writing books about it and being like, yeah, they're traumatized, and the family's literally just like, no, we're good, we just wanted this to stop.
Like, oh, we forgot about that. Oh.
Like, we forgot that happened like, what, 6 months ago. Like,
forever traumatized by this experience, and the kids literally right. Don't remember.
Right. Or it'd be like with the Conjuring 2 with the little girl who was like possessed by the guy or whatever, and people were just like, she's lying, but the Warrens were trying to drag it out so much. And then the family saw the movie and they were just like, none of this happened.
They are just insane. And then James Wan is even more insane. So it's like...
I'm just like, yo, they just a family of liars. But yeah, so I ended up not doing that one because I was like, I don't want to sit here and just be talking shit about them. But I just had to add, like, they're just such scammers that it's so funny that people like have such a different view of them. But then when you like actually look at the interviews that they did, there's almost every single family that they dealt with is like, yeah, they just took a lot of our money and are dragging the shit out of this story.
Classic. That's why I'm just like, I'll stay in the Conjuring universe. Thank you.
Right. Like, I was like, I'll watch this. But if they ever made a documentary, I'd be like, y'all liars. And I'm not supporting this.
Really, the documentary is just going to be y'all lied this whole time.
Right. Everything was a lie. The end. Okay. So the real story that I wrote about was actually a, it requires a big trigger warning, because it's a lot. So if you don't want to hear about child mutilation and abuse, you can just skip all of this. But yeah, so this was one of San Antonio's most horrific crimes. The warning signs were there. Adi Sanchez was a schizophrenic with a history of hospitalizations. She wasn't taking her medication and was depressed after her son's birth. And her son's name was, I believe, hold up, Scott Wesley Buchholz Sanchez, but they called him Baby Scotty, or at least the father did. And it was like the thing that set her off to do this crazy thing was just like a simple request of, hey, can we get some documents? And she just like went off, and it alarmed the father. It alarmed like her mom. It alarmed her aunt. And there's just like a whole history of like her just having mental health issues. So even though they knew she was battling with schizophrenia and going into the hospital for her mental health every 2 seconds and being depressed after her son's birth, child welfare officials were never called. They even, like, where she was staying had access to samurai swords, and they still never called child welfare. So this is what happened. In May 2008, 33-year-old Adi Sanchez was reported missing. Adi's mother, Manuela Sanchez, called police after her daughter didn't return from a trip to Austin, saying she was concerned about her daughter's safety. Manuela Sanchez told police she suspected Adi was into drugs and specifically told police she wasn't suffering from any mental issues. I don't know why she fucking lied, but I don't know. Maybe she was just like, she's not suffering from anything right now, but it's like, that's also a lie. So I don't know. I don't know why she lied to them and said she didn't have any mental health issues. But I feel like that also played into the problem. Manuela is terrible for that. Sorry. But
to say to police officers, so like, as a police officer, I would have been like, okay, so she definitely has mental health issues. Got it.
Right. Like, at least if she had just accidentally omitted it, I wouldn't be too mad at her. But it's like, you specifically telling them that she does not suffer from any mental health issues seems weird to me. But go off, sis. Adi just gave birth 3 weeks ago, and she wasn't doing well. 3 weeks ago, meaning it was like in May, but it was probably like last week of April or first week of May. And she wasn't doing well. Scott W. Buchholz, the baby's father, said Adi had postpartum depression and had been going to regular counseling sessions after the birth, but refused to take prescription medication for her depression. Again, like warning signs. She's not taking her meds, even though she has postpartum depression and she's schizophrenic. And then he even added, she seemed fine to him. You just said she had postpartum depression. She's not fine. That's literally a danger to the baby. But again, go off, sis. He said she seemed like a very caring, loving mother. She held him. She breastfed him. She did everything for him that was nice. No, that's literally the bare minimum of what you're supposed to do for a baby. Holding him and breastfeeding him is the bare minimum. On July 20th, Adi was taken to the hospital for depression and released less than a day later, Buchholz said. Adi told him that she was schizophrenic and was going to live with her parents and sister. So apparently before this, he didn't really know that she was schizophrenic. I don't know how you don't know that, but he apparently didn't know. Buchholz also has schizophrenia, so I don't know how he couldn't see the signs in someone else, but shh. 5 days later on Saturday, Adi brought baby Scotty for a visit but left in a rage after he asked for a copy of the birth certificate and other documents. So that was the thing that set her off. And he made a call to 911 to report that Adi stormed out and drove away with the baby without properly restraining him in the car, meaning like no car seat. And deputies investigated it as a disturbance. But it's like, if she's schizophrenic, she's not on her medication, and she has postpartum depression, why would you only classify that as a disturbance and not like child endangerment?
Well, this is 2008, and that was, what, 14 years ago? Damn. We still barely know about schizophrenia nowadays.
I'm just like, there was just so much wrong handled with this. But, yeah. So, the deputy took a report, but could do little else. And one of the sheriffs of Bexar County, his name was Sheriff Chief Deputy Dale Bennett, said if this guy had given us an indication that she had postpartum depression or mental defects she was suffering from, we may have addressed it differently.
Y'all damn lying. They know they lying. No, you would not have.
Right? I'm like, no, you wouldn't have. You are already handling it wrong.
They literally told you she drove away with the baby without restraining it.
Right? That's already a problem. Like, what are we talking about? Buchholz said he may have told the deputy Adi was depressed, but that he wasn't sure. If you weren't sure, you didn't say it. You didn't say it.
Is he unsure that she was depressed, or is he unsure that he said that?
He's unsure that he said that.
I'm done. You didn't fucking say it. He didn't say it.
Like, oh my God.
Told him that she was depressed, and he was like, I did, kinda. No, you didn't.
Right. So this is the part that is like a big, 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 big trigger warning. Instead, Adi's troubles became apparent to authorities when they found her before dawn Sunday screaming that she had killed her baby. Her 3.5-week-old son was dismembered in a scene so gruesome that police were left shaken. They actually were saying they literally walked out and was just like quiet for the rest of the investigation because they just could not believe what they were seeing. They said maybe we missed warning signs. Oh, this is a different chief. San Antonio Police Chief William McManus said maybe we missed warning signs. I don't know. Adi remains hospitalized Tuesday, recovering from self-inflicted cuts to her torso and an attempt to slice her own throat. That's what she did literally right after she killed her baby. And the former home health care worker is charged with capital murder, and she was held on $1 million bond, and she couldn't really contact her family members. They weren't responding to her, and at the time, it wasn't clear if she had an attorney, so there was just, like, a lot of things going on. She tried to kill herself after butchering her newborn son with a steak knife and two swords, while her sister and two nieces, age 5 and 7, slept in another room. So she only touched her own child and not her sister's kids. Adi told police, who described a scene so horrifying that investigators could barely speak to one another, that the devil made her kill, mutilate, and eat parts of her only child, including the brain. Buchholz, who met Adi 6 years ago while they were studying to be pharmacist assistants and is also schizophrenic, like I said earlier, said he wasn't buying her story. He said although his girlfriend had postpartum depression and told him a week before the killing that she was schizophrenic, she didn't appear unstable. But it's like, My thing is, even if she didn't appear unstable, people can suffer in silence, especially with postpartum depression. And she wasn't on her meds, so she probably wasn't saying anything because she knew as soon as she said something, they were going to send her to the hospital.
He's also schizophrenic. And, like, I guess if he's got such a good control on it, that she should, too. Like, he probably can't understand why she can't, like, be like him, you know? Like, if we both have this illness and I can handle it, why can't you?
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is, like, men and women have different ways of presenting schizophrenia. Like, schizophrenia for men is not usually voices that an altered reality that usually appears in women. So it's like, no, he wouldn't understand, but again, like, okay, like they do have altered states of reality, but it's a little bit different when it comes to the women. Like the women get constant like voices, altered states of reality. They see stuff too. Like, I think in one report that I read, like Adi was seeing the baby's face twist and contort. She probably legit thought he was a demon. So, in response to everything that she did, oh, also, schizophrenia typically develops in men in their late teens and early 20s. So he had time to be dealing with it, while women tend to develop the illness later in life. So by the time she developed it, she probably didn't even like really know what was going on with her. Like they probably knew all this time, like, okay, that something like she does have mental health issues, but it was never like I'm seeing and hearing stuff. So the postpartum depression, I feel like probably contributed to more of it. And that's why she flipped out. So it's like, you can't even say she didn't appear unstable. Like postpartum depression is already telling you something. And if she's not taking her meds, those are like three big warning signs of her, especially flipping out over you asking her for the birth certificate. Like, stuff like that is just like, all right, something's going on. Like,
right.
But yeah, in response to it, he said he wanted to pursue the death penalty. And he said, she killed my son. She should burn in hell. He told that to the Associated Press. It was also like discovered that Adi Sanchez's medical history is sort of muddled. She had been undergoing psychiatric treatment. And a hospital called looking for her 7 months ago, but she's always been in and out of a psychiatric ward. Like, she was never kept very, very long. So I feel like that also played a part where it's like, they assumed that her being out of the hospital meant like she was okay. And it's like, no, they just have a poor system in place of holding people who are very mentally ill. So it's like, not only was the hospital to blame and the police, like not even not the hospital, not only was like the family a little bit to blame and the police, but the hospital was the main people to blame, because they were the people who had the resources to know if she was stable or unstable, and they just kept letting her go, even though they kept putting her back in and then contacting her. Like, how many times did you try to contact her? Like, did you try to contact her once and then just gave up? Like, I don't know. But there were other signs too, like after, I mean, not signs, but there were other things that happened right after. Like, she said she didn't mean to do it. He told me to. That was her saying the devil told her to. And she kept saying she loves him. And the sister was there. And she was the one that made the 911 call, and she told her, like, her sister told her, like, literally, Adi, this time I told you to come to me, meaning, like, anytime she was, like, going through stuff and seeing things and hearing things, to come to her and talk to her. And she said in response, I tried, but you told me that you died. Like, she literally had a vision of her sister telling her that she is dead. So this whole time she was like feeling alone, not knowing that she could actually talk to someone. And her sister had to tell her in that moment, I'm not dead. I'm standing here talking to you. So that made her feel even worse. Like, she kept saying her sister was hearing voices. She kept bringing her the baby that was dead. And finally she calmed down and I took her back the baby. And now I just woke up to hear screaming. Like, she brought her the baby when the baby was dead, but also like she brought her the baby, like, because it was crying a lot. And because she kept hearing stuff and she kept saying, here, take the baby, here, take the baby. So it was almost like she was like telling her, take the baby before I do something without saying it. And I was just like, damn, like, I can't even, I mean, I can't really blame the sister because it's like she probably just didn't know what was going on in that moment. Because people don't really understand schizophrenia that well. But for me, if my sister is telling me I have mental health issues and you keep bringing me a child and like freaking out, I'm going to be like, all right, I'm just going to take the baby.
Right. Because like, that's my thing. Like, the second somebody says they have postpartum depression, like, my first thought would be take the baby from them. Not like,
yeah,
immediately like keep the baby away, but like take the baby away as a way to like, help soothe them in a sense where it's like you get some peace and quiet. I'll take care of the baby so you can recover as well, because you know you've been through this or whatever. Just something like that. Like, this literal second somebody says postpartum depression, I'm like, damn, they need like a lot of attention and care. And it just seems like, schizophrenic or not, like, she's not getting any of that from anybody, not even her baby's father. Like, I mean, it doesn't, you know, excuse what happened, but like, the warning signs are there. Y'all just chose to ignore them until something crazy happened.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like people need to be more educated on mental health, because they'll say things like, the person is just crazy, but it's like, they're not crazy. Their brain is just altered in a way, and it freaks them out because they know it's not normal. And especially if it comes later in life, like, you living your life all normal and then all of a sudden you seeing shit one day and hearing voices, you're gonna freak out.
And it's gonna come out one way or the other. Like, some people can try to hide stuff, but then like,
right,
that only makes everything worse. Like, you start seeing worse things, or like, you try to like explain it to people and then the look on their face is like, oh, you're crazy. So like, that kind of thing is like, I don't know, it makes it worse. And that's when they get to that point where they're like screaming at everybody, throwing stuff all around, because they don't know how to get you to understand what they're seeing, what they're feeling.
Yeah. So I just feel so bad for her, and I felt bad for the family, but I was like, listen, people just got to start paying attention to these warning signs a little bit better. Like, you can't make so many excuses that you didn't see when the warning signs were literally screaming in your face. Especially, let's leave out the fact that, okay, maybe he didn't know that she had schizophrenia, but you knew she wasn't taking her meds. You knew she was supposed to be taking meds and she wasn't taking them. So, again, I don't know, maybe that's another thing people need to be educated on, but psychosis after like giving birth is a thing. So it's just like, y'all need to start paying attention to when these people are just like sitting in a room with the baby crying for mad long, like, they have dark thoughts that come. And if people are more open about that stuff, then some of these things wouldn't be happening. But yeah, one of the other things too was that she was prescribed the antidepressant citalopram after giving birth, but had only taken it the day before killing her son. Those drugs, that specific drug, does not take effect for a few weeks. So even though that was supposed to like do something for her postpartum depression, it was too late by the time they gave it to her, because it needs to be in your system for a while.
Why would you even give that to somebody? Yeah, I want to be better next week. Like,
right,
that don't even sound right. This is 2008.
Oh.
This was another thing, too. She periodically sought treatment for mental illness before her son was even born, and even spent a few hours in an emergency room after the birth because she was hearing voices less than a week before you know, she did what she did. So it's like she tried on her end to do something about it.
Do something, yeah.
She did her part. But it's like, if you literally have someone who just gave birth coming to the emergency room saying they're hearing voices, you should be taking that seriously. She needs to be committed.
There's like the whole hospital thing where like the staff and whatever, if you don't walk in with a limb missing or something, then you're not treated as, oh, this is important.
All right.
And it's just like that hasn't changed in any hospital setting. And that's something like, because when I was working in the hospital, like, I know that like some things, maybe I just like when I would show up for my shift and a nurse would be like, oh, well, the person keeps saying this and they've been repeating it all day. So they're just crazy. And I'll go into the room with them and I try to talk to them and like understand why they're saying this and then do the thing that they're saying. They stop. So if you just like take a little care, like a little, just notice it and try to do something about it other than ignore it.
Right. Have some empathy.
And there's a lot of people who work in the healthcare field do not have empathy.
Mm-hmm. And it shows because all these new ones keep making TikToks trying to come at patients. And it's like, okay, but you're also revealing something about yourself here. That you don't have the empathy to be working in this field.
And like, it's like, why all the healthcare professionals don't care? I don't get it. What are y'all in the field for then?
The money.
Ain't no money there. Unless you own a hospital or whatever, but there's barely any money in that. Like, at least, I mean, there's money because these people are living large, but like, not enough to do what y'all do.
Right. So the last thing on this was that the county district attorney, Susan Reed, she said that basically Audie was charged with capital murder and was found competent to stand trial, but said after three examinations by separate doctors, they determined she was legally insane when she killed her son, and the court had no choice but to accept the plea of, you know, murder, and she did it under insanity, so they just put her in a hospital
that she will probably leave from or has probably already left from.
Yeah, I saw no updates, so I'm not even sure. I'm guessing that she's still in there right now, but who knows.
Yep. Ah, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, bad thing to end off with, but yeah, people need to be more aware of how to handle mental health issues. So I was like, I'd rather tell a story about this than talk shit about Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Yeah, and if it's, you know, maybe Bathsheba was also schizophrenic.
Right, because it was 1863, so you never know. She could have been hearing voices the same way she said, yo, the devil told me to do it. Adi also said that same thing, so...
And they both killed their firstborn son.
Mm-hmm. Sad. But that's it from us. Look forward to our Halloween episode and us releasing, you know, videos of us doing the things on Halloween, chatting about new movies, which I will not say what it is yet, but it's a classic. I'll just let you know that. And yeah, stay safe.
Stay indoors and don't leave your foot off the bed.